The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Ava Lewis from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence and Ebony magazines. Now we will have our first article from Essence titled Awesome Black Girl. Issa Rae laughs mightily. It's a ringing laugh that may be familiar to viewers of her hit HBO show Insecure. It's the laugh we get when she's nailing her impeccable comedic timing while in character. Except that this laugh is unscripted, as her current fit of giggles starts to settle into a melodic minor scale. Rae is being her most authentic self, part brainy, part silly and playful, and wholeheartedly confident. That absolute confidence is a gorgeous thing to behold, especially when the playful part of it is winning out, as Rae launches into a story about her current quandary, a delightful take on her growing fame and the physical transformation happening right before our eyes. Someone, she says, has tweeted something that made her see herself in a way that she hadn't quite allowed herself to before. While on location in New Orleans, where her mother hails from, and she's shooting the romantic comedy, The Lovebirds, she says, "In the mind, I'm just like, I've got to lose weight. I've been wanting to lose weight all these years, and I've been basically pussyfooting. I really need help to step it up. The TV show gave me an excuse. You start to become more cognizant of your appearance, but I realized the response to that changed recently because I was looking through tweets maybe a couple of months ago, and these girls were shading me but backhand complimenting me about how whack I was. And one of the tweets was, 'And that stupid bitch, if I looked like her, then I would never feel insecure.' And I was like, what?" She laughs again, harder this time, at the very idea. It's the kind of laugh that forces you to join in, even though you totally get the Twitter thug consensus. Issa Rae is too fine to be insecure anymore. Folks think that a woman who rocks a Rae bright smile, popping melanin, meticulous hair, whether she's sporting a curly ponytail in a Drake music video or cornrows mixed with auburn tinted 4C pattern ringlets, shouldn't ever have moments of self-doubt. Oh, fancy that. Joe Issa Rae Diop came on the scene 34 years ago, the daughter of a pediatrician from Senegal and teacher from Louisiana. Her parents met in France while they were students. Rae is one of five kids in a family that moved from Los Angeles to Dakar, Senegal, to a tiny Maryland suburb right outside of Washington, D.C. I believe that was a typo. To a tiny Maryland suburb right outside of Washington, D.C. And then back to the upscale Los Angeles neighborhood of Parkview. View Park/Windsor Hills. In all the places where Rae lived, her childhood, like so many little brown girl coming of age stories, was defined by a sense of otherness, of being too skinny, too thick, too light, too dark, too black, too wannabe. In Maryland, she was a fly in the churn of buttermilk. In Los Angeles, she was an Oreo. "My parents helped me and they hurt me," she reflects. "My mom was extremely pro-black, and I believed her. My dad is Senegalese, and I grew up around my dark-skinned cousins and just thought that they were the most beautiful women in the world. I was surrounded by beautiful dark people. And then middle school hit, and I was like, oh, they think I'm ugly? They think I'm big? They think I'm unattractive. I went back to my mom like, what the F-U-C-K? Y'all all lied to me my whole life. What is this? I started realizing, Mom, you're light-skinned. So I don't know what you were talking about. It's not like you can relate to being dark, and your hair is not the same texture as mine. So what do you know about telling me I'm beautiful? Why would you lie to me? That definitely had an impact on how I saw myself. Ray wasn't the first girl picked for romantic entanglement, but she also wasn't the type to sit around the bench feeling sorry for herself. Instead, she focused on being smart, being accomplished, and being respected. As corny as it sounds, I want you to just like my mind, she says. I think a part of it just came from figuring out that the guys I like, I'm not their type. Learning that early on made me realize there's no point in valuing the physical because it wasn't going to get me anywhere. So what can I control? And what can I bring to the table? How can I be valued in this way? And who were these fools not valuing Ray 20 years ago? They weren't just blank, 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 she says, and then breaks into a fit of laughter. I'm glad a lot of it didn't work out. I was really into cool guys. I was into very high school, muscular, college, muscular dudes. I was just like, if I'm attracted to you, then what's the problem? But did the / let's call it lack of response feel like rejection? I guess after a certain point, she says slowly, after I learned they weren't checking for me like that, I just kind of stopped caring in that way. That's not my primary focus. I've always been kind of flippant about relationships and men in general. Turns out that was a good thing. It was the indirect inspiration for the work we now know her best for. The work that launched her and led to so many other amazing opportunities, like being one of the new faces of CoverGirl and co-starring in, quite frankly, shining in a flick like Little in theaters April 12th, in which she takes a hilarious turn as the guardian of a shrunken CEO. Issa comes with this fierce intelligence about the whole film, says Tina Gordon, the movie's director. She's effective, productive, she sees the big picture, and I think she brings all of that experience into the room with her as an actor. I can just see Issa's mind working. She's just a thoughtful actress who's experienced every role imaginable. Writer, producer, probably caterer, everything. This trajectory has all began with her breakout web series, The Misadventures of Awkward Black Girl, which became a must-watch on the internet after it premiered in 2011. She worked with Girls Trip scribe Tracy Oliver, who also penned Little on the project. In 2012, Ray earned a Shorty Award for the Best Web Series, a coup for a show representing a black millennial nerdy girl trying to figure it all out. When you don't have much to do or you don't have plans on Friday night, you're making up a character who does, she says. That was an outlet for me. I fantasized all the time about having a different life, and that manifested in creating characters and worlds and scenarios. I've definitely let my imagination run free. In 2019, Issa Rae is doing the work of Throwback Issa Rae, the Issa Rae in middle school and high school who wasn't getting the love she expected as she left the comforts of her home and ventured out into the world. She's getting it now and then some, but that heightened visibility hasn't altered who she is. At the core of it, Issa is still who she always was, says Prentice Penny, Insecure's showrunner. And in terms of imagery of a chocolate sister with natural hair being unapologetic about her look, unapologetic about the clothes she wears, unapologetic about her sexuality, I think that is still not the norm. It's why Insecure is all about making black girls and women feel seen the way Ray felt seen when she saw Kelly, Shane Williams bring Laura Winslow to life on Family Matters as the ideal girl who was pretty and smart and popular and brown. I've definitely thought about middle school, me looking through magazines and being perfectly content with the fact that my face wasn't going to be used to sell makeup. That wasn't my future, Ray says. I just didn't imagine that. So the fact that it happened is like, just never effing know. And you should never discount anything. I like so many of us tend to be comfortable with what we're not and complacent with what we're not. You really don't have to be. I didn't saw world peace or anything. It's not like that. But something that felt so small and intangible ended up being tangible. And that's just the coolest thing in the world. The next article entitled Vast Beauty from Essence Magazine. Ours is beauty that refuses to conform, bend, or break. The way our features command attention and our skin radiates a spectrum of hues makes it impossible for us to fit into society's narrow scope of physical attractiveness. From where we sit, the possibilities are endless and deserving of praise, a sentiment that's echoed by legendary fashion advocate Bethan Hardison. It is essential to celebrate black beauty because popular culture has taken over the fashion and modeling industry. The black community is used to our vast beauty. But now it's become so important that society reflects its every medium, Hardison explains. It's not acceptable for the entire race to be represented by any one archetype. The lack of inclusivity can also breed ignorance. Stunning images of diversity within our diversity is an opportunity to remind onlookers of our magnificent existence and for them not to get lazy in their minds and think there isn't beauty beyond themselves, says Hardison. The New York City-based thought leader has been woke from the start and hopes others will be too. I've never needed to have outside validation. I never get conflicted about my race or where I came from or who I was, no matter how white my environment was. There is no limit to our blackness, and that's what makes us so wondrous. Belgium apologizes to African nations for colonial era child kidnappings. From Ebony Magazine. Belgium's Prime Minister Charles Michel issued a public apology Thursday for the colonial-era kidnapping, deportation, and forced adoption of thousands of mixed-race children born in Central Africa, CNN reports. According to BBC, about 20,000 Métis, M-E-T-I-S, children born to white Belgian settlers and black local women in Burundi, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Rwanda are believed to have been affected. During an appearance at the country's parliament, Michael said, on behalf of the federal government, I recognize the targeted segregation and policy of forced abductions of the Métis during the colonial rule over Belgium, Congo, and Rwanda, Burundi, referring to the countries by their colonial era names. Offering apologies to the children affected, he continued, in the name of the federal government, I apologize to the Métis from the period of Belgian colonization and to their families for the injustices and the suffering that they went through. Michael said the scandal stripped the children of their identity and expressed regret for African mothers whose children were snatched from them. Comments from Michael came weeks after the United Nations Working Group of Experts on People of African Descent released a report on the conditions within the country. We urge the government to issue an apology for the atrocities committed during colonization, the statement said. There is clear evidence that racial discrimination is endemic in institutions in Belgium. The root causes of present-day human rights violations lie in the lack of recognition of the true scope of violence and injustice of colonization. Belgium colonized Central Africa from the 1800s to 1960. Children affected by the kidnappings were born in the 1940s and 1950s and taken to Belgium from 1959 until the independence of each of the three colonies, the BBC reports. A next article, Belgium elects country's first black mayor. Pierre Compagnie came to Belgium as a refugee from the Democratic Republic of Congo. His son, Vincent, is a professional footballer in the Manchester City Football Club, and now he is the first black mayor in Belgium's history. Compagnie was elected mayor at Gand-sur-Rhône, a Brussels borough of about 25,000 people. The newly minted mayor ran a campaign that avoided identity and racial politics, but the local election is being celebrated as a moment of racial progress in Belgium anyway, Quartz Africa reported. Compagnie, an engineer by trade, entered the political arena in 2006 when he was elected as a councillor, and in 2014 he won a seat in Brussels Regional Parliament. According to reports, Compagnie resists titles like the Obama of Brussels and race politics, running an independent campaign that focused on issues like child care, elderly assistance, and improved soccer fields. Compagnie's sons, Vincent and Francis, who play soccer as well locally, wish their dad congratulations via Instagram, not shying away from the obvious. History, we are so proud of you, Dad. Come over from the DR Congo as a refugee in 1975. Now gain the trust of your local community, becoming the first ever black elected mayor in Belgium. It was long overdue, but it's progress. Massive congrats, Vincent wrote on his social media account. No stranger to calling out a lack of diversity in Brussels. The captain of Manchester City, Vincent, tweeted a critique of the Belgium Parliament right before his dad was elected. I'm especially proud, and so is the whole Congolese community, that a black man was directly elected by Belgians in a city like Gachurin, which has maybe 100% of Congolese origin, local historian told the New York Times. The next article for this evening is titled, 83-year-old man to receive doctorate in social work. An 83-year-old man who once dropped out of school in the sixth grade will graduate with his doctorate degree on Friday. Johnny W. Jones is getting his degree in social work from Louisiana State University, LSU. The Advocate, Louisiana's largest daily paper, reports. One of the guys who climbed Mount Everest, I don't remember his name, when someone asked him why did he do it, he said, because the mountain was there, said Jones. That's pretty much my attitude towards knowledge. I'm pursuing it because it's there. The Mississippi native said he dropped out of school to help support his family Following the start of World War II, Jones joined the Marine Corps in 1953 and noticed that high school graduated, Jones joined the Marine Corps in 1953 and noticed that high school graduates were getting better duties, which inspired him to enroll in night school to earn his diploma. He was taking classes at junior college before he was deployed in Vietnam, even taking classes from LSU in Vietnam through his school's correspondent courses, writes the Advocate. He got his bachelor's degree in sociology from the University of Hawaii and received his master's degree in social work in 1975 from LSU, 2 years after he retired from the Marines. In his 80s, after spending time working as a warden at the Louisiana Department of Corrections, he decided to pursue his doctorate while becoming an assistant professor of criminal justice at Southern University, per the Advocate. All of these students I have classes with, practically all of them are old enough to be my grandchildren, and they find it amazing that I would be subjecting myself to that kind of mental torture at my age, where I am retired from the Marines, retired from the corrections, he said. Why are you doing this? I can't explain it to them. He seemingly brushed off the idea of his age being a hindrance, calling it an artificial constraint. Jones said he plans to go to law school, but he has no plans to practice law. It is my intent to pursue higher education as long as I'm physically and mentally able to do so, he said. I don't plan on stopping. Next article from Ebony. White woman admits to lying about black man attacking her. Police have called off a manhunt in Quincy, Massachusetts, after a woman has admitted to lying about being attacked by a black man. WHDH reported Monday that officers were on the hunt for a suspect who violently assaulted and robbed a woman at Russell Park. Police say the woman had visible injuries and claims to have been thrown down on a dirt path behind the tennis courts and robbed of her sneakers, jacket, and money before the suspect fled on foot. According to the Boston Herald, she described the suspect as a black male in his early 20s who was bald, clean-shaven, and was wearing a black hoodie, blue jeans, and black shoes. After reviewing park surveillance footage, police re-interviewed the woman, who then confessed to making up the attack. The woman, whose name has yet to be revealed, was issued a summons for filing a false report. Also from Ebony, Beyonce turned down Reebok deal due to lack of diversity. Music megastar Beyonce and Adidas announced their upcoming Ivy Park collaboration this week. The Houston native is set to release athleisure wear and sneakers with the brand after reportedly taking several meetings with competitors including Under Armour, Jordan Brand, and Reebok. According to ESPN, writer Nick DiPaola, the Lemonade singer took staff diversity into strong consideration when deciding whom to work with, saying on a recent episode of The Jump, I had heard a great story about how, throughout this process in the last year or two, she has discussed with Under Armour, Reebok as well. Jordan at one point was interested in maybe partnering with her. She had a meeting at Reebok, and they had a whole presentation of everything, potential products, how this could all look. And she kind of took a step back and said, is this the team that will be working on my product? Somebody said yes, and she said, nobody in this room reflects my background, my skin color, and where I'm from, and what I want to do. She said she kind of took a step back and left. And then it did not come and then it did not come to terms. Fellow panelist and television host Rachel Nichols observed how unprepared Reebok reportedly was considering Bay's background. I love that's an amazing story because it's one thing to talk about, oh, I want diversity, I want representation, but for a company not to realize with Beyonce's track record, we better put people in the room, we better be able to elevate people who can do the job and be able to do, who can do the job, and to be able to do the job, you have to come from where she's coming from. Also from Ebony, FBI investigates suspicious fires at three black churches. Three predominantly black churches in one South Louisiana parish burned to the ground over the course of 10 days. The FBI launched an investigation into the string of fires after suspicious elements were found, the New York Times reports. State Fire Marshal H. Browning released a statement in the wake of the fires. "There is clearly something happening in this community," he said. "That is why it is imperative that the citizens of this community be part of our effort to figure out what it is." The first fire was set on March 26 at the St. Mary Baptist Church. Greater Union Baptist Church was burned on April 2nd. The Mount Pleasant Baptist Church caught fire 2 days later. All three fires occurred in St. Landry Parish, and each church was at least 100 years old. A fourth fire in Cotta Parish, about 3 hours north of where the other three fires occurred, happened on Sunday, we found to be intentionally set. Ashley Rodriguez, a spokeswoman for the Louisiana Office of State Fire Marshal, said, "But just as we haven't connected the three in St. Landry, we haven't connected the one in Caddo." Jeff, a spokesman for the New Orleans Field Division of the Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, ATF, confirmed the FBI and the ATF's involvement with the ongoing investigation. Sheriff Bobby of St. Landry Parish said investigators were working, willing to do whatever it takes to keep the citizens and churchgoers in his parish safe. "We're doing everything we can collectively to solve this crime." According to the New York Times, investigators have yet to rule out the possibility of arson or the possibility of or the possibility that fires are related. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Ebony. We hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I am Ava Lewis reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138, 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.